Chapter 107. Can she do? If her home is always dull and lonely, and her husband is always absent, and finds no pleasure in her society, she is naturally sometimes driven, seldom enough, she is sure, to seek a little recreation elsewhere. She is not expected to pine, and mope to death, she hopes. Then come, Louia, apostrophe says the gentleman, waking up as suddenly as he fell asleep, stop at home this evening, and so will one. Apostrophe I should be sorry to suppose, Charles, that you took a pleasure in aggravating me, apostrophe replies the lady, but you know as well as I do, that I am particularly engaged to Mrs. Mortimer, and that it would be an act of the grossest rudeness and ill-breeding, after accepting a seat in her box and preventing her from inviting anybody else, not to go. Apostrophe ah. There it is. Apostrophe says the gentleman, shrugging his shoulders, I knew that perfectly well. I knew you couldn't devote an evening to your own home. Now all I have to say, Louia, is this recollect, that I was quite willing to stay at home, and that it's no fault of mine we are not oftener together. Apostrophe, with that the gentleman goes away, to keep an old appointment at his club, and the lady hurries off to dress for Mrs. Mortimer's. And neither thinks of the other until by some odd chance they find themselves alone again. But it must not be supposed that the cool couple are habitually a quarrelsome one. Quite the contrary. These differences are only occasions for a little self-excuse, nothing more. In general they are as easy and careless, and dispute as seldom, as any common acquaintances may, for it is neither worth their while to put each other out of the way, nor to ruffle themselves. When they meet in society, the cool couple are the best-bred people in existence. The lady is seated in a corner among a little knot of lady friends, one of whom exclaims, Why, I vow and declare there is your husband, my dear. Apostrophe apostrophe whose? Mine? Apostrophe she says, carelessly. Eh, yours, and coming this way too. Apostrophe how very odd. Apostrophe says the lady, in a languid tone, I thought he had been at Dover. Apostrophe the gentleman coming up, and speaking to all the other ladies and nodding slightly to his wife, it turns out, that he has been at Dover, and has just now returned. What a strange creature you are. Apostrophe apostrophe cries his wife. And what on earth brought you here, I wonder? Apostrophe apostrophe I came to look after you, of course, apostrophe rejoins her husband. This is so pleasant a jest, that the lady is mightily amused, as are all the other ladies similarly situated who are within hearing, and while they are enjoying it to the full, the gentleman nods again, turns upon his heel, and saunters away. There are times, however, when his company is not so agreeable, though equally unexpected. Such as when the lady has invited one, or two particular friends to tea and scandal, and he happens to come home in the very midst of their diversion. It is 100 chances to one, that he remains in the house half an hour, but the lady is rather disturbed by the intrusion, notwithstanding, and reasons within herself, I am sure I never interfere with him, and why should he interfere with me? It can scarcely be accidental. It never happens that I have a particular reason for not wishing him to come home, but he always comes. It's very provoking and tiresome, and I am sure when he leaves me, so much alone for his own pleasure, the least he could do would be to do as much for mine. Apostrophe observing what passes in her mind, the gentleman, who has come home for his own accommodation, makes a merit of it with himself. Arrives at the conclusion that it is the very last place in which he can hope to be comfortable, and determines, as he takes up his hat and cane, never to be so virtuous again. Thus a great many cool couples go on until they are cold couples, and the grave has closed over their folly and indifference. Loss of name, station, character, life itself, has ensued from causes as slight as these, before now. And when gossips tell such tales, and aggravate their deformities, they elevate their hands and eyebrows, and call each other to witness what a cool couple Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so always were, even in the best of times. The plausible couple have many titles. They are a delightful couple, apostrophe an affectionate couple, a most agreeable couple, a good-hearted couple, apostrophe and the best-natured couple in existence. Apostrophe the truth is, that the plausible couple are people of the world, and either the way of pleasing the world has grown much easier than it was in the days of the old man and his ass, or the old man was but a bad hand at it, and knew very little of the trade. But is it really possible to please the world? ... says some doubting reader. It is indeed. Nay, it is not only very possible, but very easy. The ways are crooked, and sometimes foul and low. What then? A man need but crawl upon his hands and knees, know when to close his eyes, and when his ears, when to stoop, and when to stand upright. And if by the world is meant that atom of it in which he moves himself, he shall please it, never fear. Now, it will be readily seen, that if a plausible man or woman have an easy means of pleasing the world by an adaptation of self to all its twistings and twinings, a plausible man and woman, or, in other words, a plausible couple, playing into each other's hands, and acting in concert, have a manifest advantage. Hence it is that plausible couples scarcely ever fail of success on a pretty large scale, and hence it is that if the reader, laying down this unwieldy volume at the next full stop, will have the goodness to review his or her circle of acquaintance, and to search particularly for some man and wife with a large connection and a good name, not easily referable to their abilities or their wealth, he or she, that is, the male or female reader, will certainly find that gentleman or lady, on a very short reflection, to be a plausible couple. The plausible couple are the most ecstatic people living, the most sensitive people, to merit on the face of the earth. Nothing clever or virtuous escapes them. They have microscopic eyes for such endowments, and can find them anywhere. The plausible couple never fawn, no. They don't even scruple to tell their friends of their faults. One is too generous, another too candid. A third has a tendency to think all people like himself, and to regard mankind as a company of angels. A fourth is kind-hearted to a fault. We never flatter, my dear Mrs. Jackson, ... say the plausible couple, we speak our minds. Neither you nor Mr. Jackson have faults enough. It may sound strangely, but it is true. You have not faults enough. You know our way, we must speak out, and always do. Quarrel with us for saying so, if you will, but we repeat it, you have not faults enough. ... The plausible couple are no less plausible to each other than to third parties. They are always loving and harmonious. The plausible gentleman calls his wife darling, ... and the plausible lady addresses him as dearest. ... If it be Mr. and Mrs. Bobtail Widger, Mrs. Widger is Lavinia, darling, ... and Mr. Widger is Bobtail, dearest. ... Speaking of each other, they observe the same tender form. Mrs. Widger relates what Bobtail said, and Mr. Widger recounts what darling thought and did. If you sit next to the plausible lady at a dinner table, she takes the earliest opportunity of expressing her belief that you are acquainted with the Clickets. She is sure she has heard the Clickets speak of you. She must not tell you in what terms, or you will take her for a flatterer. You admit a knowledge of the Clickets. The plausible lady immediately launches out in their praise. She quite loves the Clickets. Were there ever such true-hearted, hospitable, excellent people, such a gentle, interesting little woman as Mrs. Clickett, or such a frank, unaffected creature as Mr. Clickett? Were there ever two people, in short, so little spoiled by the world as they are? As who, darling? ... cries Mr. Widger, from the opposite side of the table. The Clicketts, dearest, ... replies Mrs. Widger. Indeed you are right, darling, ... Mr. Widger rejoins, The Clickets are a very high-minded, worthy, estimable couple. Apostrophe Mrs. Widger remarking that Bobtail always grows quite eloquent upon this subject. Mr. Widger admits that he feels very strongly whenever such people as the Clickets and some other friends of his, here he glances at the host and hostess, are mentioned. For they are an honor to human nature, and do one good to think of. You know the Clickets, Mrs. Jackson? Apostrophe he says, addressing the lady of the house. No, indeed, we have not that pleasure, apostrophe she replies. You astonish me, apostrophe exclaims Mr. Widger. Not know the Clickets? Why, you are the very people of all others who ought to be their bosom friends. You are kindred beings. You are one, and the same thing. Not know the Clickets? Now will you know the Clickets? Will you make a point of knowing them? Will you meet them in a friendly way at our house one evening, and be acquainted with them? Apostrophe apostrophe Mrs. Jackson will be quite delighted. Nothing would give her more pleasure. Then, Lavinia, my darling, apostrophe says Mr. Widger, mind you don't lose sight of that. Now, pray take care that Mr. and Mrs. Jackson know the Clickets without loss of time. Such people ought not to be strangers to each other. Apostrophe Mrs. Widger books both families as the center of attraction for her next party, and Mr. Widger, going on to expatiate upon the virtues of the Clickets, adds to their other moral qualities, that they keep one of the neatest phaetons in town, and have 2,000 a year. As the plausible couple never laud the merits of any absent person, without dexterously contriving that their praises shall reflect upon somebody who is present, so they never depreciate anything or anybody, without turning their depreciation to the same account. Their friend, Mr. Slummery, say they, is unquestionably a clever painter, and would no doubt be very popular, and sell his pictures at a very high price, if that cruel Mr. Feathers had not forestalled him in his department of art, and made it thoroughly and completely his own. Feathers, it is to be observed, being present and within hearing, and Slummery elsewhere. Is Mrs. Tablwick really as beautiful as people say? Why, there indeed you ask them a very puzzling question, because there is no doubt that she is a very charming woman, and they have long known her intimately. She is no doubt beautiful, very beautiful. They once thought her the most beautiful woman ever seen. Still, if you press them for an honest answer, they are bound to say that this was before they had ever seen our lovely friend on the sofa. The sofa is hard by, and our lovely friend can't help hearing the whispers in which this is said. Since that time, perhaps, they have been hardly fair judges. Mrs. Tablwick is no doubt extremely handsome, very like our friend, in fact, in the form of the features, but in point of expression, and soul, and figure, and air altogether, oh dear. But while the plausible couple depreciate, they are still careful to preserve their character for amiability and kind feeling. Indeed, the depreciation itself is often made to grow out of their excessive sympathy and goodwill. The plausible lady calls on the lady who dotes upon her children, and is sitting with a little girl upon her knee, enraptured by her artless replies, and protesting that there is nothing she delights in so much as conversing with these fairies. When the other lady inquires if she has seen young Mrs. Finching lately, and whether the baby has turned out a finer one than it promised to be. Oh dear! Apostrophe cries the plausible lady, you cannot think how often Bobtail and I have talked about poor Mrs. Finching. She is such a dear soul, and was so anxious that the baby should be a fine child, and very naturally, because she was very much here at one time, and there is, you know, a natural emulation among mothers, that it is impossible to tell you how much we have felt for her. Apostrophe, is it weak or plain, or what? Apostrophe inquires the other. Weak or plain, my love, apostrophe returns the plausible lady, it's a fright, a perfect little fright. You never saw such a miserable creature in all your days. Positively you must not let her see one of these beautiful dears again, or you'll break her heart, you will indeed. Heaven bless this child, see how she is looking in my face, can you conceive anything prettier than that? If poor Mrs. Finchin could only hope, but that's impossible, and the gifts of Providence, you know what did I do with my pocket handkerchief? What prompts the mother, who dotes upon her children, to comment to her lord, that evening on the plausible lady's engaging qualities and feeling art, and what is it that procures Mr. and Mrs. Bobtail Widger an immediate invitation to dinner? The nice little couple, a custom once prevailed in old-fashioned circles, that when a lady or gentleman was unable to sing a psalm, he or she should enliven the company with a story. As we find herself in the predicament of not being able to describe to our own satisfaction nice little couples in the abstract, we purpose telling in this place a little story about a nice little couple of our acquaintance. Mr. and Mrs. Chirrup are the nice little couple in question. Mr. Chirrup has the smartness, and something of the brisk, quick manner of a small bird. Mrs. Chirrup is the prettiest of all little women, and has the prettiest little figure conceivable. She has the neatest little foot, and the softest little voice, and the pleasantest little smile, and the tidiest little curls, and the brightest little eyes, and the quietest little manner, and is, in short, altogether one of the most engaging of all little women, dead or alive. She is a condensation of all the domestic virtues, a pocket edition of the young man's best companion, a little woman at a very high pressure, with an amazing quantity of goodness and usefulness in an exceedingly small space. Little as she is, Mrs. Chirrup might furnish forth matter for the moral equipment of a score of housewives, 6 feet high in their stockings if, in the presence of ladies, we may be allowed the expression, and of corresponding robustness. Nobody knows all this better than Mr. Chirrup, though he rather takes on that he don't. Accordingly, he is very proud of his better half, and evidently considers himself, as all other people consider him, rather fortunate in having her to wife. We say evidently, because Mr. Chirrup is a warm-hearted little fellow, and if you catch his eye, when he has been slyly glancing at Mrs. Chirrup in company, there is a certain complacent twinkle in it, accompanied, perhaps, by a half-expressed toss of the head, which as clearly indicates what has been passing in his mind, as if he had put it into words, and shouted it out through a speaking trumpet. Moreover, Mr. Chirrup has a particularly mild and bird-like manner of calling Mrs. Chirrup my dear, and for he is of a jocose turn of cutting little witticisms upon her, and making her the subject of various harmless pleasantries, which nobody enjoys more thoroughly than Mrs. Chirrup herself. Mr. Chirrup too, now, and then affects to deplore his bachelor days, and to bemoan, with a marvelously contented, and smirking face, the loss of his freedom, and the sorrow of his heart at having been taken captive by Mrs. Chirrup, all of which circumstances combine to show the secret triumph and satisfaction of Mr. Chirrup's soul. We have already had occasion to observe that Mrs. Chirrup is an incomparable housewife. In all the arts of domestic arrangement and management, in all the mysteries of confectionery making, pickling, and preserving, never was such a thorough adept as that nice little body. She is, besides, a cunning worker in muslin and fine linen, and a special hand at marketing to the very best advantage. But if there be one branch of housekeeping in which she excels to an utterly unparalleled and unprecedented extent, it is in the important one of carving. A roast goose is universally allowed to be the great stumbling block in the way of young aspirants to perfection in this department of science. Many promising carvers, beginning with legs of mutton, and preserving a good reputation through fillets of veal, sirloins of beef, quarters of lamb, fowls, and even ducks, have sunk before a roast goose, and lost caste and character forever. To Mrs. Chirrup, the resolving a goose into its smallest component parts is a pleasant pastime, a practical joke, a thing to be done in a minute or so, without the smallest interruption to the conversation of the time. No handing the dish over to an unfortunate man upon her right or left, no wild sharpening of the knife, No hacking and sawing at an unruly joint. No noise, no splash, no heat, no leaving off in despair. All is confidence and cheerfulness. The dish is set upon the table, the cover is removed. For an instant, and only an instant, you observe that Mrs. Chirrup's attention is distracted. She smiles, but heareth not. You proceed with your story. Meanwhile, the glittering knife is slowly upraised. Both Mrs. Chirrup's wrists are slightly. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.